Create Your Own Life, episode 116.
You're listening to the Create Your Own Life podcast, the show to help you create life on your terms. 5 days a week, Jeremy Ryan Slate interviews the most successful people in business and in life to help you create the life you want to create. Welcome to Life Creation Nation.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. If you're like me and you're a podcast listener, which if you're listening to this show, you most likely are, then you listen to a lot of audiobooks. So if you head over to jeremyryanslate.com/book, you can get your free audiobook from Audible. So be sure to check that out. This episode is sponsored by HostGator. I've hosted my sites with HostGator for a bunch of years now because, number one, they're fast to work with. Number two, the hosting platform itself is great for what you're actually able to do with it. And another thing is actually being able to host your email as well. So it's a really big deal. Go over to jeremyryanslate.com/hosting to get started with HostGator today. Hey, what's up, everybody? Jeremy Ryan Slate here, and welcome to the latest episode of Create Your Own Life. Hope you guys have been enjoying a lot of what we have going on, and I'm really excited to bring this one to you today, guys. Really cool guest in store for you. Just remember, I want to remind you guys that if you have not picked up our top 10 strategies for creating your own life, you can get that over at jeremyryanslate.com/strategy. Drop in your email address and it will be emailed to your inbox. But let's get into today's guest. Today's guest, at just out of college, decided that he was going to leave New York City and move to California. And things changed pretty drastically for him then. He went through a number of jobs before eventually landing a job as a celebrity personal trainer, creating a program with Beachbody called P90X that absolutely blew up and has become one of the biggest things in fitness. And it's really incredible, a lot of the things that have been involved in getting him there. Today's guest is P90X creator Tony Horton, and I'm very excited to bring this one to you guys. So without further ado, let's get into our interview with Tony Horton. So I am super pumped to be with the creator of P90X today, Tony Horton. Tony, welcome to the Create Your Own Life podcast.
Jeremy, I'm really excited. I think the next 40 minutes will be filled with fun, fascination, and facts.
I love it. I love it. I want to kind of start off, Tony, with your change of environment, because I've picked up that that's been kind of big for you early on, moving from New York to California. And I want to kind of start out just to frame our conversation of what kind of an effect you think changing from New York to California had on your viewpoint and where you were going.
I think it was a tipping point for me early on in my early growth. You know, I grew up in the tri-state area, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, actually Rhode Island as well. But so I'm part New Englander really more than anything else. And there was a certain mindset for me in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, you know, before I moved out to California in 1980. It was just something that wasn't working for me personally. You know, I felt like I was more of a renegade than somebody who was wanting to sort of stick to the status quo there. You know, I could have easily gotten married, had a couple of kids, and got a job and whatever, and then moved my way up. But I always knew that that wasn't what I really wanted. And so when I got an invitation to move to California after I almost graduated from college, I just jumped on it. And the geographical shift was enough to force me to readapt and to learn and to grow and to evolve, because it's just very different out in California. A lot of people come out here from different parts of the country, and they don't really feel like they fit in. They're not willing to sort of completely transform themselves because there's a certain aspect about who they are, where they're from, their culture, their background, their hometown that they have a very strong affiliation with, and they don't, and it's hard for them to go, whoa. I mean, not that this place is Looney Tunes or anything. It's just that it's, for me, as a young entrepreneur, as a young kid who was kind of looking to do his own thing, it just gave me the opportunity to sort of start over, to think outside of the box, to get a brand new fresh start. And so that's why I think a lot of people kind of, you know, move out of their small town and go to big cities, you know, whether it be Boston or New York or Dallas or Chicago or LA or San Francisco or London or Tokyo. I mean, whatever it is. Just the simple act of packing your bags and saying goodbye and saying, I'm going to give myself a year or whatever, 6 months to see if this thing works. And I think that can be huge. It really can be huge in your own personal growth.
Absolutely. Well, being from the greater New York area myself, I'm kind of interested to hear just what kind of things actually changed for you once you got out in California.
Well, you know, for example, you know, when I was a kid, I was on the football team in high school, more of a tackling dummy really during the week than an actual player, but they needed somebody to run over, right? Practice. And, you know, I was a smaller kid and, I just wasn't good enough. We had a great team in high school. So, you know, if I was on a bad team in some other town, I might have gotten more playing time. But so, you know, as a young athlete, I wasn't familiar with training. There wasn't really exercises so that you could become a better athlete. You know, most of us lifted weights or we went on runs or we went jogging or something. But there wasn't really sports-specific training so that we could become better football players or basketball or baseball or tennis or skiing. You know, I mean, I look at how much exercise has evolved in the last 35 years. It's just amazing, you know. And so it's the reason why there are more records broken, why athletes, you know, have greater longevity in their careers, and why people, you know, why 5'9" guys can dunk. I mean, there's just a myriad of things that we've learned in all these years. But back in those days, you know, the only gym that you would find was at the high school or on the college campus. There weren't aerobics gyms and bodybuilding gyms, at least not anywhere that I was familiar with. And just by moving here, they were everywhere, and I had never experienced that before. So that was a huge shift for me, just seeing, you know, different types of fitness facilities that were everywhere. You know, there were aerobics gyms, and there were, you know, spinning gyms, and there were yoga classes and Pilates classes, and I was just so enamored by it all. And I was also sort of insecure and skinny. I took a weightlifting class in college that, you know, where I had some gains, and I had that experience at least. But to be able to have to take a class to lift weights was crazy, you know what right. I mean? Not in California, man. Anytime, anywhere, all over the state, you know, all over the city of Los Angeles, there were different ways to move. And so I gravitated to that pretty quickly. And then the other thing too, dietarily, for me, you know, it was hot dogs and burgers and pasta and steak and potatoes and corn on the cob and milk and Dr. Pepper, you know, and right. Twinkies and Frosted Flakes and just any, you know. And my mother was a great cook, you know, and she was an Italian, so we had a lot of Italian food. But, you know, she wasn't, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, wasn't versed in non-GMO, gluten-free, low sugar, non-hydrogenated fats. I mean, there were all these things that, you know, you learn over the course of, you know, time. And so what ended up happening was there was a physical change in me, right? So there was this sort of a regular activity that I wasn't participating before at all, really, except for playing some basketball and skiing and some tennis and trying to be a football player. There wasn't this regular routine that I had that involved aerobics and anaerobics and plyometrics and yoga and Pilates and weightlifting and body weight and core and functional and proprioceptive fitness. Like, none of those things existed when I was a kid. So, of course, what's going to happen is there's going to be sort of a biochemical change from an improvement in diet. So the fat, sugar, salt, and chemicals are going away over the course of, you know, my early education when it came to the food, and also the regular physical activity. So I'm now releasing norepinephrine, dopamine, serotonin, things inside of my brain that were allowing me to, you know, build my confidence and improve my memory and my cognition and my willingness to say yes more often than no. And so when I was a young, weak, fragile, intimidated procrastinator, my favorite word was no. So whenever opportunity came along, I would just usually just turn it down because I was afraid to be the worst one or not be able to keep up, or, you know, was afraid of the learning process. If I wasn't great out of the box, I usually didn't participate, which meant I didn't participate very often at all because I wasn't good at very many things. And then I came out here and I've started to evolve out here, you know, physically, dietarily, but as a result of those two things, I was changing mentally and emotionally, which was affecting my finances. And so, and that wasn't like it was perfect, and it took decades to happen. But I understood the process, and the process was the antithesis of what I was doing on the East Coast as a young kid and as a young man.
Absolutely. Well, I've also heard you speak before about the number of different jobs you had once you got out west before you could kind of decide, you know, what you really wanted to do. What was that process like for you of kind of trying different things and seeing what worked?
Well, you know, I came out here with $400 thinking that was all I would need to come to circumnavigate the entire country.
If only it were that easy, right?
$400. Yeah, you couldn't get from Rhode Island to New Jersey on $400 now, you know. I mean, so, But I ran out of money in Boulder, Colorado, and I was a trained mime, and that was one of the, my avocations that kept me alive. And so I broke out my mime makeup and mime outfit in the middle of Boulder, Colorado, and threw my hat down for about a day and a half, made $125 so I could get myself to Huntington Beach. And then once I arrived at Huntington Beach, you know, I was crashing out on my buddy's sister's living room floor in sleeping bags for the entire month, for June, July, and August. And then somewhere toward the end of July, I entered a talent show. And, you know, I used to do this kind of crazy NC-17 rated pantomime routine.
Oh, gosh.
I won't give you the details, but it was provocative. But it got people to laugh. And it was, you know, I mean, I was recreating, you know, sex on stage with no one on me, nobody there, you know, so it was kind of a fun thing. And I would play Beatles music and ELO and this great acid jazz band called Jean-Luc Ponté. And I would just kind of, you know, I would sit there, and back in those days, you had to put the album down and you had to put in your cassette tape and then you had to record it one song at a time. And I would just crank up the music and I would do this crazy X-rated mime routine on stage. And so I won this talent show. The first prize was $500. So in the course of a 20-minute routine, I made more money than I had collected to come across the country. And then the second place winner was this sort of affluent realtor that was a pretty good banjo player. And he came in second, and he heard my sad tale, and he gave me his second prize winnings of $250. And so all of a sudden I had $750 in my pocket, and I just thought, oh my God, I'm the richest man in the world. But it was enough money to sort of get my deposit, my first and last month's deposit for my apartment and a first month's rent. And so me and my buddy that came across the country, we just moved into this little place in Hermosa Beach. Didn't have a stick of furniture. You know, we had to go out in the alley and find mattresses. We'd go to old houses that were for sale, and we'd find, you know, old picnic table. We made that our dining room table. And you know, we would use plastic forks and knives. I mean,
wow.
Paper plates, and we found a couch in the alley, but it didn't have any cushions, but at least it was something to sit on. And that's how it was in the early days. You know, we were just so thrilled to be in California and experience the whole thing. And we didn't mind the struggle because we were 21, 22, 23 years old. But I was also a carpenter, and I was a handyman. So I had those odd jobs. I was even, a go-go dancer at Chippendales after 10 o'clock, 10 to 2. For a summer. I waited tables at the Bel Air Country Club. You know, I tended bar at wealthy people's homes on the weekends. Anything and everything that I could possibly do, you know, and just to sort of feed my face. And whenever I just didn't have anything, I would throw on the mime makeup and I'd go into Westwood, you know, near UCLA, or go down to the Santa Monica or Venice Pier. And I'd make about 25, 30 bucks. When I thought I had at least about 25 or 30 bucks, I would quit. And then I would live on Cheerios and yogurt, and that was kind of the only thing that I could really afford. I'd go to the corner liquor store where I lived, and I would just get vanilla yogurt and Cheerios and breakfast, lunch, and dinner, man. And so, you know, it was rough in those days, but there was no sense of ever giving up. You know, there just wasn't. And over the course of time, I kept training, and I was taking acting classes and did voiceover classes and learned how to read a teleprompter. You know, these are all things that took a couple of decades over the course of time, you know. So then I met my first celebrity trainer, Tom Petty. I got Tom ready for this tour, and I got him ripped. I got him ripped in 4 months. I had 4 months with the guy. Worked out every day, 5 days a week. And then Billy Idol called, and then Bruce Springsteen called, and then Annie Lennox from the Eurythmics called, and then Stephen Stills from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and then Sean Connery called. Submarines don't react well to bullets. That's it, my Sean Connery. Thank you, I'm here all week. And Shirley MacLaine, you know, who she's – you know, maybe a lot of you are, the demographics 24 to 35, you're going to have to Google her, but she was literally Hollywood royalty. And then I had this really neat, I didn't have to do all the other things. You know what I mean? I didn't have to do the mime at the pier anymore. I didn't have to wait tables or tend bar. I had a job as a production assistant over at 20th Century Fox. And I did that early on, but then after that, I didn't need that anymore either. And so it was just, I had this little training business, but I drove my car into the ground. I had a 1966 red Mustang Rally Sport convertible, and it was badass, but it was horrible to drive from Venice to Malibu to Hollywood,
Oh my gosh. Town.
But I had my own little business, and I figured out what to charge people, and I figured out the whole thing on my own. I didn't have any mentors or coaches or anything. I didn't have people like me to show me the way. I figured it out, you know what I mean? I figured it out because I had to eat, and I had to pay my bills, and I had to pay my rent. So it was either that or live on the street, right? So, you know, that's, if you want to call me an entrepreneur, at that stage of the game, it was sort of self-taught entrepreneurship.
Yeah, but you know, I love that, Tony, because there's so many people that just complain about, you know, they didn't get this and they didn't get that, but you were always looking for a solution. So I think that really has a lot to do with a lot of the things that you've done since that point.
Well, that's so true. You know what I mean? I mean, look, the glass is either half full or half empty. And people who see it half empty focus on the problems. And people who see it half full figure out what the problem is. They establish what it is, and then they search for solutions. And they also realize that the answers aren't going to be inside of them. Mm-hmm. The answers are usually outside of themselves. And so, you know, is it a phone call? Is it an email? Is it a letter? Is it a one-on-one meeting? Is it a personal development book or seminar or mentor that you have to hook up with? And that's all I did. I just kept searching out people that were smarter than me. And quite often I got turned away, but that didn't dissuade me. I mean, it bummed me out. Like, geez, I thought for sure so-and-so was going to help me. And I thought for sure I'd get something. I spent, you know, $800 on this seminar. I didn't learn a damn thing. But hello, that's life. You know, I mean, what, is it supposed to be some kind of magical ladder to the top of the world where you have the perfect wife, the perfect life, the perfect body, the right amount of money? No. I mean, it's just, you know, it's also about learning to be in the moment and understanding that you have to enjoy the journey and not becoming attached to the outcome and having very low expectations. I mean, that's it. I mean, if you figure that out, and you exercise regularly and you eat really well and you understand that that's the foundation of success because it gives you the energy and enthusiasm to go out in the world and kick ass, well then, ta-da, then you've made it, right?
Absolutely.
Because I'm going to be 48 in a couple of weeks. And you know, it's just sticking to the plan and then understanding that, oh, by the way, the plan's got to change and not hanging on to the old plan because it doesn't work anymore. And you know, kind of constantly reinventing yourself. The only reason why I'm still successful, you know, especially since I've been with this company, Beachbody, since 1999, is because times change, trends change, people change, communication changes, technology changes. And if you're not willing to sort of change with the changes, then you're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I've done. You know what I mean? And it's all purely based in fear of failure. Right? I mean, just thinking that if I don't do X or communicate with this person, or continue to learn. I mean, I don't assume that I know everything. And
right.
So that's the reason why as times change, you have to continue to do. But a lot of people in my industry, in my field, are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Billy Blanks, who's the top of his game, gone. Susan Powder, gone. Gunnar Peterson, you know, these great people in this industry. I don't know why. A lot of it's bad luck, bad decisions. You know, who knows? I've got 21 businesses that failed since I started with Beachbody. 21. 5 TV pilots, several pieces of fitness equipment, home delivery, Tony Horton kitchen delivered to your house, Tony Horton kitchen with 7-Eleven, failure. I mean, what I mean failure is, you know, these small businesses that just never took off. And I paid a price for every one of them because, you know, I got to pay for lawyers.
Right.
And I got to pay for prototypes. And, you know, I got to pay people that work for me to help me with this process. So, you know, I mean, I literally have flushed down hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, I'm not going to say I flushed it down, but, you know, you kind of scratch your head and go, well, bummer. But I got a new one out now called Tony Horton Care, and we're really excited about it. It's a shampoo and body wash and face and skin lotion, and we're having a great launch, and we're continuing to grow. And so my hope is that this is not number 22, you know, that this will be a real success outside of Beachbody. I've been very fortunate with Beachbody because that organization didn't exist 18 years ago, and now it's worth $1.4 billion, and there's over 1,000 employees. And we're we were a teeny company that was, you know, trying to climb the ladder, and then everybody else is trying to climb up after us now. So, and the fact that, you know, that I'm still with them and they, you know, still want to continue to work with me and help me develop programs is awesome. I mean, I feel blessed. I feel blessed. I'm very lucky.
Well, out of those 22 you mentioned, I'm kind of interested to hear what was the one that you really thought was going to go, but it just didn't.
FitMob. It was an idea really from my two partners at that time. My friend Bill came up with the name FitMob, which I loved. But it was really sort of a, you know, it was an app or a website where somebody like me and then other hired trainers like me in various parts of the country and around the world would kind of set out the bat signal. Hey, I'm going to meet everybody in the park and we're going to do this workout. Come join me, 24 hours, 48 hours, right? We had some backers up in Silicon Valley, that we had met that was, you know, were so dying to do a project with me. And it had such tremendous potential. But, you know, the fact of the matter is the numbers were great early on. And then our partners up in Silicon Valley just did the old switcheroo on us. You know what I mean? Just completely, hey, by the way, for us this to work, we have to give you a tenth of what we were going to give you percentage.
Wow.
And we looked at him and went, you know, because we need this to raise money. And the guy that we were working with, I'm not going to say his name because he's still, you know, in the sort of working at these things and building other businesses. I don't want to throw him under the bus, even though I'd like to. but, you know, it's just not fair. You know, he was doing what he thought was best to kind of build a company. And so whatever. I mean, you know, if you asked me this question a year and a half ago, oh, my God, I'd be screaming right now. But it's all part of the learning process. You know, I mean, we really thought this thing was going to be huge. And then they wanted me to be the face and the guy and the ads. And then, you know, because the percentages went down, they said, oh, well, you know, it's probably best that we don't have a celebrity name because that will maybe negatively affect the growth process. And we all scratched our head and said, well, that was the reason why you came to me in the first place. So it just didn't make sense. And we had such high expectations. And I spent tens of thousands of dollars on lawyers, man, for that thing. And it all went away. I think the other one too was Tony Horton Kitchen 7-Eleven. We had it in 110 stores, and there was a new development crew at 7-Eleven, a bunch of young, smart entrepreneurs that were really excited to, you know, get some healthy options in 7-Eleven. There are, I don't know, 53,000 stores around the world, and we were already, you know, counting our castles and our moats and our alligators, you know. And then, but there was the other faction at 7-Eleven who just would rather sell, you know, poison to people, you know, hot dogs and Slurpees and cigarettes. I mean, and they just said, why fix it if it ain't broke? And then, you know, the crew that was behind us all got fired, gone. And so whatever support team that was left over just didn't care. You know what I mean? It's, that whole thing just faded away. And boy, man, when I got on the phone with them and I just said, you know, I was pretty angry. I said, you know, we worked 2 years on this thing, and this could have been a major tipping point for the company, for the country, to be able to walk into a 7-Eleven and get these super healthy meals. I mean, the time and effort that went into picking ingredients and where to get them and what kind of salads and what kind of you know, really super healthy mixed fruit and vegetable drinks and things, and then it all went away. You know, and you just think, oh, you want to give up, right? But I don't know, man. You got to keep trying. You know what I mean? You don't want to turn into a curmudgeon. You just, even at my age, a lot of guys, like, whatever, they start throwing in the towel and they just settle in. And I refuse to do it.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about that, though, Tony, is I feel like, you know, we're finally starting to hit a little bit of that tipping point now where it's not quite in a 7-Eleven, but a lot of healthier options are starting to come around.
No, that's true. I mean, a lot of big corporations are getting it. You know, they really are, because the average consumer is paying more attention. They understand that there's an obesity crisis, and it's sure as hell not from gunshot wounds and car accidents. But it's really as a result of our inability to be able to feed ourselves properly. And so when things are cheap and super yummy and they're filled with, you know, before in the old days, things were just fattening, or things were just, you know, had too much sugar, or things just were loaded with chemicals. Now they got everything in there. You know, they've turned a simple hamburger into, you know, like a heroin addiction.
Right.
Because of the nature of the ingredients in that stuff, you know, in French fries. And then, of course, when everything is $1.99, you know what I mean? Why not? It's super tasty. It's super convenient. It's super cheap. And then the corporation wins out, right? And then everybody else is, you know, getting Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and cancer and hypertension and high blood pressure and stroke, and the beat goes on. And now, you know, is that genetic? Is it environmental? Well, most of it's behavioral. I mean, the vast majority of people who end up with various illnesses is because they made bad food choices. Of course, hydration's important, and sleep and stress management too. But you got to start with the fuel that you put into your body. And so, you know, I mean, I was a kid that, because I was skinny, you know, I was a skinny little ectomorph. You know, my parents were thin, I was thin, so obviously I was going to be thin. But so are a lot of people who start out that way, but then they just keep, you know, abusing themselves with bad food choices. And so it had to change. You know what I mean? People were protesting. They were getting mad. I mean, the sales of bread was going down. The sales of dairy was going down. The sales of soda pop was going down. And it had never done that before. It was the first time. So, you know, I mean, I think Coke and Pepsi make as much money selling water as they do their poisonous soda,
right?
You know? So, and look, a Coke once in a while, or a Pepsi once in a while in a small bottle hell, man, it's not gonna kill you, right? I'm not saying that it's absolutely, you know, all or nothing. I mean, for some people, it is all or nothing. They just understand that, hey, I have two choices. I have three choices every time, and snacks in between every day. And what kind of choices do I want to make? You know, so, you know, maybe you've been out running around having fun. You know, a nice cold Coke would be perfect. You know what I mean? I don't drink it. I don't drink alcohol. I don't drink soda. I don't drink coffee. You know, I don't need, especially at my age, I don't need to be putting anything in my mouth that's not helping. You know, I don't care whatever degree or whatever level it is. And so, you know, I drink, my vice is little pieces of unsweetened dark chocolate, boring, and non-alcoholic beer, boring. But, I mean, I can do 60 dips in a minute, and I can do 51 pull-ups in 2 minutes, and I can climb a rope upside down, and I can ski 4,000 square feet in Jackson Hole without stopping. So, and at 58, I don't have any pals that can really do that. So it is really about making choices so that you can not just make money and not just have nice things and not just say, look at me, but really about having a really interesting, exciting, adventurous life. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about for me, man, more than anything else.
Absolutely. Well, where did the idea of P90X come from for you? Because the thing I've noticed early on is it seems like, and I've heard you actually mention this, that since you were doing so many different types of workouts, you weren't really burning your body out like a lot of athletes were. Where did that idea come from for you?
Well, I understood early on that most people don't have long-term success because of boredom, injuries, and plateaus, right? So, or some combination thereof. That's usually how people go down. You know, they get caught up in some trend, even if it's something as fabulous as yoga or Pilates, they just kind of get into the yoga only or Pilates only or bodybuilding only or track workouts only mentality because maybe they were pretty good at it early on and they don't feel like, you know, being bad at some other form of fitness. And so, you know, originally there was Power 90. And so Power 90 was the sort of P90X Lite. And that's the reason, that was the product that really got things started, where we did push-ups and pull-ups and squats and lunges and cardio and yoga and some floor Pilates. And it's just a, kind of a variety of exercises from 25 to 35 minutes a day, 5 or 6 days a week, which was, you know, there was nothing like that ever. You know, most companies, fitness companies had, you know, some little silly device that was supposed to do everything. And they would put a bunch of fitness models in there and put some beautiful music to it. And a lot of people got fooled, right? And everybody else was going to the gym and spending, whatever, an hour and a half, 2 hours in the gym, not really knowing what they're doing and not really being able to afford a trainer 5 or 6 days a week. I mean, the average person would have a trainer once in a while, you know, except for the super wealthy. And so what I wanted to do was give people convenience based on everything that I had learned in all those years. And I wanted to introduce them not only to things that they were pretty good at, but also things that really forced them to work on their weaknesses. And so if you were a kind of a weightlifting football player, oh, by the way, now you got to do cardio that you're not familiar with. You got to do yoga that you're not familiar with. You got to do ab movements that you're not familiar with. And let's say you're a girl who's sort of a, you know, a cardio queen and you love the cardio and that's all you ever did. And you never really liked lifting weights or doing body resistance stuff. Then now you were forced to do that as well. So regardless of whether you were thin or heavy or male or female or young or old, the program over the course of 3 months was forcing you to do things that you were unfamiliar with. And so what that does is, especially 6 days a week with modifiers and intensifiers and everything else, and we know with a good diet attached, you were forced to change. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just stuck to it, you were forced to change. You know, whether you liked it or you didn't like it, or whether you were good at it or you weren't, you were forced to change because you had to do some version of what you were watching on screen. And more than half the time, for a lot of people, 70 to 80% of the time, they were seeing things on screen they had never seen before in sequences they had never experienced before and in rep counts and weight numbers and all they had never seen before. So just the simple act of trying to keep up forced amazing change. You know, guys like Jeremy Yost lost 180 pounds, this kid named Richard Neal. He wears the t-shirts that say what his weight is. The t-shirt just says 242. That's what he lost, 242 pounds.
Wow.
And Kathy McNeil, you know, here's a gal, not fit, not athletic, 125 pounds. So that's all through a program that was never designed for them. It wasn't designed for obese people. But I made it in such a way so that it would resonate with more than just, you know, ex-athletes that had to lose, you know, 15, 20, 30 pounds. And that's why we sold, I don't know, 8, 9 million copies of it. Probably around 2 or 3 million pirated that we never made a penny on. And so from there, you know, was it P90X2, P90X3, P90X Plus, Power 90 Master Series, one-on-one with Tony Horton, the 10-minute trainer, you know, I mean, just kind of looking at the demographics, seeing who needed our help, and just creating programs for everybody.
Absolutely. And how did P90X get hooked up with Beachbody? Was it something that you came up with and they approached you on, or did you come up with it jointly?
No, I mean, Carl Deichler, the CEO, and I were friends before Beachbody even existed.
Got it.
Beachbody was his creation. You know, mm-hmm. he was just a buddy and a workout partner and a fun guy to hang out with and a great guy to go ski with and a great guy to have laughs with. And he and I got him in the best shape of his life. And then I went off on a film. I was working on this film, The 13th Warrior with Antonio Banderas. And I was up in Canada for like 3 months. And so in that 3 month period, he just kind of kept doing what I showed him. And then he was just, you know, he was an infomercial guy out of Philly. And he moved out to California to sort of find his way as well. And he hooked up with a company called Guthy Renker, which were, you know, they were the infomercial company of their time. They do Proactive and couple of other really popular products, Windsor Pilates and others. And Carl was working for them. And then at one point he just said, hey, I want to do my own thing. And they said, you know, we'll help you out. We, you know, we think you're a great guy. If you want to do your own fitness only thing, because Guthy was doing everything, you know, skincare and hair care and fitness and whatever, at home LASIK eye surgery. I'm kidding. But, and Carl just wanted to be the fitness guy. He really thought there was a real need. And we were pals, and it was just serendipitous. It was one of those things where he said, hey, do you want to be in this thing called Great Body Guaranteed? I can pay you $2,000, and I just want to kind of see how this thing does. And I got a few bucks from media buys. And we did, and it worked, and then we made Power 90. Power 90 didn't work at all, and then we restructured the infomercial based on people's before and after pictures and their own video. And we just put that on the air because it was more compelling than using our test group that we had used, our, you know, under more strict conditions, and people at home were getting crazy results. So we put that in the thing, and it blew up. You know, I mean, I was living in an apartment for 21 and a half years, this horrible little place in kind of a funky part of town with a view of a convalescent home, which is at the rate I was going, I was probably going to have to move into if I had stayed there. I mean, 21 years in one place, it's a long time. But Power 90 just paid all the bills, paid all my debts, allowed me to put a ton of money in the bank and buy my first home. You know, I ended up buying from a little two-bedroom apartment with a gym into a four-bedroom home with a view of, you know, the San Gabriel Mountains and the Getty Center and the Hollywood sign. It was crazy, man. It was just such a weird, awesome jump. And so, you know, once I moved into the house after the Power 90 success, Carl said, what should we do next? And I said, well, we should do something for the clinically obese. And he said, no, let's make Power 90 harder. And I went, oh my God, you're out of your mind, dude. I don't think it's going to work. But he gave me a year to develop it. And I thought, okay, we got to have modifiers. We got to hit as many people as possible. And so we worked together, of course, with all great, he had a great, you know, development team over there. But I did my research on Pilates and yoga. I want to make sure that was right. We have that, you know, that Kempo routine in there, which I was not versed at first at all, but I wanted to create a sort of an aerobic skill-based routine that wasn't just jumping and jumping jacks and whatever. I wanted to really have something a little bit more interesting. And so a year later, we put it out there and it did the same thing Power 90 did. It just failed. It just, no one bought it because they thought, okay, that first one was hard, but this is insane. But the insane few who decided to do it, did it, and their results were so off the chart, and we used their results in the next infomercial, the second round, and it blew up, man. It blew up. I was able to buy furniture and stuff, so it was nice and for the new house. And it's been a great ride ever since. I mean, P90X became this iconic brand that almost everybody knows. I mean, you know, anybody who's anybody who pays attention to anything. I mean, and then if you don't, you call it PX90. You know what I mean? If you want to mispronounce it, that's fine. But it's just, you know, it's in movies, it's in commercials, it's in you know, Bruno Mars songs. There's celebrity after celebrity after sports athlete after politician, you know. P90X is the reason why I've been to 50 military bases around the world. P90X is the reason why I've been to the Congressional Gym a half a dozen times. P90X is the reason why I met the First Lady and I've been, you know, the Pentagon 3 times. You know, P90X is the reason why I can, you know, travel around the country and do seminars and ask for a pretty penny for just, you know, helping people understand what it takes to feel better and to be happy on this planet. And so that brand changed my life. You know, of course, now we have 22-minute hardcore, which is a boot style camp program that's been out about now 5 months. The infomercial will probably hit in August or September. And it's the biggest thing that since I've done since P90X, partly because I think, you know, it's 22 minutes. It's relentless. It's not easy. Even the cardio one and resistance one are just hard right out of the box, but it's only 22 minutes. So you just kind of suck it up. But the modifiers are in there as well, you know, showing you how to kind of take it easy if you need to. And it's exciting because, you know, P90X2 didn't do as well as P90X. P90X3 did better than P90X2, but still didn't do as well as P90X. And 10 Minute Trainer was another great program that helped a lot of people who just didn't like exercise and didn't have the time. But that nothing did as well as P90X. But now 22 Minute Hardcore is launching at a faster, more successful rate than P90X did. So who knows what's going to happen when the infomercial comes out. And so it's exciting. It's exciting that whatever, you know, since 99, here it is, you know, 2016, I've got something coming out that's doing as well at the start than as P90X did, that's now 11 years old.
Absolutely. Well, including that, what does the next 12 months look like for you, Tony?
Oh, God. Well, there's a lot of travel for me. You know, I was working with Eddie Lacy. I think everybody knows that now. Eddie Lacy works for the Green Bay, as a player for the Green Bay Packers. Just a great kid, 25-year-old. Kind of lost his way, you know, yeah. When you first get into the league, you kind of eat too much and you kind of relax too much and you just kind of, you know, deal with the grind because the NFL, there's so much pressure. Mm-hmm. So he spent about 2 months with me back in Jackson Hole and also here in L.A. He'll be back. We're going to work together again for about 3 more weeks before the preseason comes. So I'm going to see him for most of July.
Well, I'm a huge Packers fan, so they definitely take good care of him.
Oh, dude, on your fantasy team. You know, but he's a really quiet, humble guy. You know, he just doesn't like doing the interviews. He's not really – he doesn't wear any bling. He's just got a good work ethic. He's just a good dude, you know what I mean? And so he trusts me. You know, he's coming back. He could go anywhere, but he's going to hang out with me. And we're going to go at it pretty hard for those 3 weeks. So that'll be that. And then I go off to New York and Rhode Island. I'm doing a fundraiser for New York for Rhode Island for a theater there that was, you know, the first theater when I was a kid in 1964 when I saw the Beatles' Hard Day's Night. The theater, like a lot of, you know, businesses around the country, just sort of ran into hard times. So we're there trying to the United Theater, it's called. We're trying to raise some money for them. And then I'll be at the Omega Institute next weekend. So I don't know how soon when you air this, but we got about 10 spaces left. And it's a 2-day intensive.
Wow.
We do a yoga class. We're going to do a 22-minute hardcore class. We're going to do an obstacle course. We're going to do seminars. We're going to play reindeer games. And it maxes out at 100 people, and we've got around 80 now, so we've got room for some more.
Well, this is actually going to come out on Wednesday, so in another day and a half. So where can people find out about that? You know, what do they need to know about it, Tony?
Well, if you want to know anything and everything about me, if you want to know anything about Tony Horton Care, you want to know about my schedule or live events or public speaking or fundraisers or whatever, you want to go to TonyHortonLife.com. And that's where you can find anything and everything. We try to keep the website very up to date as far as my schedule goes and what I'm up to and what I'm doing. So that's TonyHortonLife.com.
Absolutely. Well, Tony, we're about to come in for a landing here, but before we do, are you ready for some rapid-fire questions?
Ready to go. Speed round.
All right. You're selected to give a commencement speech at the university of your choice. What topic do you cover and why?
It would probably be at my alma mater, be at URI, and I would just, you know, talk about my early success and that proper eating and regular exercise is truly the foundation to success, happiness, joy, and adventure.
Absolutely. Do you have a quote that you've kind of followed through your journey?
Well, you know, there's one that I've got that I'm kind of known for. It's trademarked even. It's called "Do Your Best and Forget the Rest." And it really basically says that you just have to show up every day, do what you can. Your best changes all the time. And it's your ego and your expectations that really create the problem. So just forget all that. And if you do, I think life will be much easier and much more productive.
Absolutely. What about one book that's had a big effect on your life?
Oh, I don't know, man. You know, I mean, Keith Ellis's The Magic Lamp, Gary Zukav's whole series of books are amazing. John Rady I'm a good friend of John Rady, who wrote the book Spark, you know, The Effects of Physical Activity in the Brain. And that book, I quote him all the time. You know, we get together once in a while. He's just brilliant. He's a Harvard professor who wrote this book called Spark, and I love it, and I talk about it a lot. So it's a speed round, so I don't want to give you too much.
What entrepreneur do you admire most and why?
You know what? A couple, both named Brendan. Brendan Brazier is a friend of mine. You know, he's the developer of Vega, this little, you know, sort of a vegan supplement line that they just sold for hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, you can go to any Whole Foods store and see Vega. He walks the talk, man. The guy is awesome. And then Brendan Bouchard, who's a personal development guru, who he just got done doing Oprah Winfrey's course and Tony Robbins' course, and he and I are getting together in August to do my course, online course. And of course, Mark Sisson, Primal Nutrition. Mark is, you know, he's a paleo guy. Brendan's the vegan guy. And so I follow both of them, and I'm doing just fine.
Cool. Well, people have very different definitions of success, but what does success mean for you if you got to define it?
Finding your purpose and practicing that on a regular basis and hopefully making some income while doing it. Too many people are stuck in the machine and they're working for the man and they're not happy. So, you know, for me, figure out what you love, make it your habit, and see if you can turn it into your job. And you'll have true happiness on this earth. Absolutely. I think it's pretty simple. It sounds almost too simple, but that's what I did, and here I am.
Absolutely. Well, Tony, you had mentioned Tony Horton Life. You know, where else can people find you?
Well, you know, you can go to, I think that's where you can find me. You know, you can go to my Facebook page and my Twitter page and my Instagram page. My Facebook page is Tony at Beachbody, or I think it's Beachbody at Tony Horton. And then Tony _ Horton at Instagram. And I don't even know what my Twitter page is. So there you go. Because I got other people who do that stuff for me. You know what I mean? I go, post this, put it on all my social media sites. And so that's a little embarrassing that I don't even know what my Twitter page is. So what also too is social media is incredibly important, right? And I mean, that's just the sign of the times. But if it's not your thing, because I'm 58, so it ain't my thing. And my thing is sort of, you know, inspiration, motivation, education. And so I just was fortunate enough to be able to hire the right people who can kind of help make all those things happen. But if you go to TonyHortonLife.com, you'll find out what they are because they're all right there.
Absolutely. Well, Tony Horton, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule and hanging out with us today.
Jeremy, you're the man. I appreciate it. Good questions. Thanks a lot. Great being here.
So I hope you guys enjoyed hanging out with Tony Horton today. He was a ton of fun. We learned so much about his life, what it was like creating the product in P90X, and a lot of what that journey's been like. But also, if you're interested in finding out more about Tony's intensive, that is coming up very, very soon. That's over at TonyHortonLife.com. And be sure to hook up with Tony over there. So if you want to hook up with the show notes for this episode, it's over at JeremyRyanSlate.com/Tony-Horton. Have an awesome day, everybody, and thanks for hanging out.
Now go out there and create your own life. Motivation may be great, but action is better. Get it done, my friends.